Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We've got good, bad, and crazy martinis for you today. As usual, we start with the good, and it's actually a statement President Obama was stressing quite heavily in his press conference earlier today with the leader of Estonia. One of the many things they talked about, of course, was the situation between Russian-backed rebels in Ukraine and the threat that Russia potentially posed to other former parts of the USSR, including Estonia. And the president made it clear that protecting Estonia and other NATO members is a critical priority for the U.S.
So I've come here first and foremost to reaffirm the commitment of the United States to the security of Estonia. As NATO allies, we have Article 5 duties to our collective defense. That is a commitment that is unbreakable, it is unwavering, it is eternal, and Estonia will never stand alone. As president, I've made sure that we are fulfilling that promise.
And so, Jim, hopefully Estonia is never actually threatened by Russia or anybody else anytime soon. Now, they've definitely put together one of the best success stories since the end of the Cold War. But the president's certainly saying the right things here.
Yeah, and I can understand if some folks want to say, what's the use? This is the same old Obama. He's, you know, we've seen him give good speeches before. Is there action behind the words? So those are all legitimate concerns. But let's face it, you know, last week he came out and said, we don't have a strategy in dealing with this. And he seemed to think this was a good point, and that this was something that would make us feel better about things. And then later on it said the world is safer than it was 20 years ago. So considering the bar that has been set by seeming absolutely delusional about the level of threat, absolutely in denial and quasi panic inducing, a good speech that makes clear that America will stand by its NATO allies, including its Eastern European NATO allies, the ones closest to Russia. This is pretty good. I remains to be seen whether, you know, we really are going to be able to deter further Russian aggression. I think it's interesting that we're going to be doing some operations with the Ukrainians, which is kind of a useful indicator of that we are taking this seriously. We'll see what move Putin makes in response. But you know, this is kind of what our allies needed to hear and probably what our foes needed to hear as well. Because we're stuck with him, I want to see him better rather than worse. And so I kind of feel like we need to encourage any little slight signs of improvement we see in this president.
Unfortunately, that doesn't seem to be much in the way of encouraging news and reaction from this administration when it comes to the threat posed by ISIS. Of course, on Tuesday, we found out through the latest video released by ISIS that another American journalist, this time Stephen Sotloff, has been beheaded by this terrorist army. And one of the things the president talked about in his press conference today when asked by Ann Compton of ABC is, do you have a strategy? And here's the curious response that the president gave.
Well, keep in mind that from the outset, the moment that ISIS went into Mosul, we were very clear that this was a very serious threat, not just to Iraq, but to the region and to U.S. interests. And so we've been putting forward a strategy since that time.
Since the fall of Mosul in June, Jim, you and I on the Three Martini Lunch were talking about ISIS when they took Fallujah back in, I think it was January, which is around the time we got the JV comment from the president. And now Fox News' Catherine Herridge is pointing out that the threat posed by ISIS was part of the presidential daily briefing for at least a year before Mosul fell to ISIS in June. And she also pointed out once again that the president, unlike his predecessors, has a habit of just reading the briefing, not actually being briefed, and doesn't really have much of a track record of asking follow-up questions. So the idea that this suddenly caught this administration by surprise doesn't seem to be holding much water.
Way back when, I think it was the New Yorker, did a very long, detailed piece just hanging around with President Obama and what his day was like. And I remember them saying he was the first president to get the PDB on his tablet. So he's just kind of browsing through. I don't know if that's a good format for in-depth, attentive reading or whether Obama, like, yeah, I skimmed it. I perused it. There was something in there about ISIS. And back when he had, you know, had said that he didn't know that we were tapping the phone of German Chancellor Angela Merkel, there were quotes from people, unidentified folks in the intelligence community saying, like hell he didn't know. If the White House is claiming they didn't know, then clearly somebody's not, you know, paying attention in their briefings. So this may have been a matter of, let's blame the intelligence community. Let's use them as the scapegoat and say they didn't tell us when in fact they did. In this circumstance, it's not surprising. I mean, even if you want to argue about the status of forces agreement, there's no doubt that our intelligence community is watching places like Iraq very closely and seeing a group like ISIS that didn't show up overnight. And considering how the president, he says, well, we've always taken this very seriously. President Obama does not talk about foreign threats unless he has to. This is a president who doesn't want to talk about the war on terror unless he has to. He'd much rather go and talk about the need for raising the minimum wage or infrastructure spending or any of these other issues that seem really small ball at a time like this, really ticky-tack compared to life and death issues that are facing us. And he just kind of feels like he's on this autopilot from 2008, and he doesn't want to deal with the world as it is. What's kind of intriguing is, you know, Krauthammer saying it, Joe Nocera, a columnist for the New York Times, there's this increasingly not so quiet murmuring. The president is just completely out of touch on this. And I think it was the Washington Post editorial board that said, look, you listen to Chuck Hagel talk about ISIS. He sounds like he's really, you know, intensely concerned. Secretary John Kerry, you know, even though I can't stand the guy in a lot of other areas, speaks about this correctly usually. You can hear the fury in his voice when he talks about ISIS. And then Obama comes out and he says it's a regional issue and something to be managed. There's this very strange disconnect there where you got to wonder how much Obama is listening to his cabinet on these issues.
Speaking of terrorist threats, let's move to the crazy martini now. And with the 9/11 anniversary coming up just next week, this carries even more gravitas to the story. This is from the Washington Free Beacon. Islamist militants in Libya took control of nearly a dozen commercial jetliners last month, and Western intelligence agencies recently issued a warning that the jets could be used in terrorist attacks across North Africa. Intelligence reports of the stolen jetliners were distributed within the U.S. government over the past 2 weeks and included a warning that one or more of the aircraft could be used in an attack later this month on the date marking the anniversary of the 9/11 terrorist attacks. The State Department, in one sense, not even commenting at all. Another official there saying we can't confirm that that's the case, but we certainly know that terrorists are now doing belly flops in the pool that used to be the U.S. Embassy in Libya, and it's kind of a free-for-all there. So, Jim, I guess it's perhaps a little better that the terrorists know that we're aware that this could happen, but the fact that they still have access to this is very concerning.
Yeah, it's something to observe. Like, I put this in the morning jolt. I don't want to panic people. And something else to note is that for these planes to be used in a 9/11 style attack, they would need pilots, and they would need pilots who are willing to die. Now, those aren't impossible to find, but they don't necessarily grow on trees. Nonetheless, I mean, there's a point, you know, late yesterday when this news first broke that it just kind of felt like we were reaching critical mass in terms of ominous news reports. That the Saudi king was saying he expects ISIS, unless somebody hits them really hard right now, is going to hit Europe sometime in the next month. And the United States the month after that. Now, is he maybe hyping this because he wants help for the side that he prefers in Syria? I suppose. But it's not like it's unbelievably unthinkable. We are approaching the 9/11 anniversary, and I am working on a story right now talking to lawmakers, just asking them, how concerned are they about attacks on the 9/11 anniversary? Now, maybe we're every bit as vulnerable the day before and the day after, but we do know that these groups do care about anniversaries and key dates and symbolic dates and things like that. Libya is really a mess right now. Remember, this is one of the early triumphs, and I'm making air quotes as I say that, for leading from behind, in which, you know, we now have no U.S. personnel on the ground in Tripoli. That's probably a wise decision considering how lawless it is. But, you know, at this point, the Islamists now have, if not control over Libya, have as much control over Libya as anyone else. And I think we're seeing just how phenomenally dangerous that is. And you know, kind of our just a last, you know, crazy point to recognize, Greg, you know, we think about it, back in the post 9/11 years, those of us who were defending President Bush and saying we were, you know, had generally the right approach in those years, we said, look, you know, the Islamists want to form a caliphate. And groups like Media Matters said that was some sort of crazy, paranoid conspiracy theory. That wasn't what Muslims wanted to do. And Glenn Beck was feeding everybody's fears and paranoia and things like that. Well, here they are. This is what the Islamic State is. I mean, they're saying they are the caliphate. And then the next thing is over in Libya, they've effectively got control over the country because the other groups that were anti-Qaddafi are rapidly losing control. So everything we were warning about in the post 9/11 years is coming to fruition right in front of us. But, you know, celebrities have their nude pictures hacked, Greg. So that's, you know. And I shouldn't point too many fingers in that because I did write about that in the Morning Jolt, in addition to all the depressing war stuff. But everybody who kind of said that this was this manageable, containable police action style threat is looking kind of foolish right now.
There's a lot of different told you so's going on out there right now, and let's hope there's not too many horrific ones in the days ahead. Jim, sobering day, but we'll hopefully have better news tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today, and be sure to join us again on Thursday for the next edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Have a great day, everyone. Thank you.